Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Over the past years, we've seen a lot of research about anger. There are many self-help books and clinical treatments about dealing with anger. But there's a lack of information about how anger is treated in different populations. We see anger all around us. We probably all know someone who is a rageaholic. We've seen those road rage events. And for some, anger is debilitating. It prevents them from keeping a job or having a healthy relationship. It keeps them from being a productive member in society. So to help us talk about anger as an emotional disorder, we're joined by Ephraim Fernandez. He's from UTSA, and he's recently released a book about the treatment of anger in different populations. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David.
And so we want to hear from our listeners what you think about anger. If you know someone in your life who is a rageaholic, give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. Also, if you've got questions and comments, you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. So, Dr. Fernandez, we all get angry. I get angry sometimes, but is that necessarily bad?
Obviously not. Anger can be functional. In fact, one of the things we start out pointing out in the book is that anger is there for a reason. In evolutionary terms, just like sadness, just like fear, it has survival value.
But then there are times where, I guess, talk about rageaholics, people who seem like they just quickly hit, they go from 0 to 100 miles an hour on the rage meter very quickly and often.
Yes, certainly. And that word often is very important. Much of whether something is a problem or not, according to Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, much of it depends on the frequency, the duration, the intensity of the anger.
So we have this thing about anger management. We hear about sometimes someone has a road rage problem, and maybe they end up in a courtroom, and part of their sentencing is go seek anger management. What is anger management?
Well, first of all, I must say I don't particularly go for this term anger management. Why? Because it implies that, you're just managing the problem, right? You're just containing it. Imagine if someone would tell you, you're managing an organization. All you're doing is you're not solving the problems. You're not changing anything. You're just managing it, keeping things going. What I'd like to convey in terms of the ideal anger management program, so to speak, or anger treatment program, as I prefer to call it, is that, yes, anger can be controlled, anger can be reduced more than just coped with.
And so how do you do that?
Well, there are many programs out there. Some of them are the substance of many self-help books, and we've developed our own program which views anger as a process. So it attempts to catch anger at the earliest stage using what? Prevention techniques. And then, should those not be fully effective, it attempts to catch anger at the next phase when it's escalating. We call that the intervention stage. And then beyond that, there's one more stage, and it's called postvention. It's not a commonly used term, but it simply means when there is residual anger. Sometimes 10, 15, 20 years, people have told me they've remained angry about something that they couldn't get over. Well, that's also important. We have techniques for each of these phases of anger.
So when a person is in that state of anger for so long, I mean, that's got to take an emotional toll on you or a physical toll on you, because it does amp up your adrenaline. You have an emotional response. You're tearing up all things around you. There's a lot of good reasons why people should get anger, let's say, not under control, but find a way to soften it and turn anger into something else.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is an emotional toll. Absolutely. In our book, we talk about how anger becomes the fuel for a lot of interpersonal conflict, how anger impairs your judgment on the spot, how anger, let's not forget, also produces physical health risk. Many people are not aware that anger is actually bad for the heart. It is one of the problems in people who have cardiovascular disease, hypertension, arteriosclerosis. So there are many things, many ways in which anger does take a toll on the person's mental and physical health.
But we hear when I say think about anger management, I think about making management angry. That's what I wanted, anger management. But the anger management, these courses, they kind of have been derided as too, you know, hippie, tofu, and, you know, peace, love, and kumbaya. But the key is to what? Because something is making people angry. They probably have something in their past, right?
Well, there can be what we call a predisposition to anger. Yes, just as there can be a predisposition to depression or to anxiety. But that's not the full explanation. Oftentimes there are precipitating factors, sudden triggers that bring on anger.
And so what can people do? How can people identify how to treat this?
Well, first of all, if they themselves are admitting to having impairment in their lives because of anger, that's already a start. That's the first thing that's needed. Secondly, motivation is important. In our program, we build upon the existing dominant approach called cognitive behavior therapy. We expand it into what's called cognitive behavioral affective therapy, or CBAT. And so, as I mentioned earlier on, we have a prevention phase, an intervention phase, and a postvention phase. In the prevention phase, what is paramount at the outset is to get people, and this we do, to sign a contract to get off anger, so to speak. And this is not just a formality. It's not meant to be a legal document. It's important because it secures the commitment of a person. You're not going to get people to overcome anger if they're not committed to it. Simple as that. Then, once they have committed to it by signing a contract, we use a range of cognitive behavioral techniques. We use role modeling, use rehearsal. We use things like response prevention, stimulus control. I know these all sound like technical terms, but they can be easily operationalized in a way that people understand.
Well, the role modeling thing is, I mean, we know what that is, and yeah. It's amazing how well you could actually do that, even in your own home. If you have an adolescent or someone who's got a anger problem, you could work that out just by doing role modeling, you know, in the living room, saying, hey, this might have been a better way for you to dealt with that.
Absolutely. I think role modeling is a big part of social skills training and anger regulation. It's a cornerstone of prevention, seeing somebody else in the same situation do something different and better.
Right. So, there are role models that are teaching us to do things poorly, you know, and that they're all around us.
Yes, what we call anger mismanagement.
And so how do so I guess we should be aware that those are people who are giving us their bad examples. They're the bad models.
Absolutely, yes. We see many examples in the media, you know, in the movies and so on of bad examples. And hopefully people with reasonable judgment can figure out that imitating bad models leads to bad consequences. And the opposite for imitating good models. But it goes beyond modeling into a lot of things that a person can do, you know, cognitively and emotionally as well.
Right. So we all find ourselves in varying states from time to time, and occasionally we're going to erupt and reach for the anger button, and we'll hit it, and maybe we'll feel better momentarily. But there's consequences to doing that if you hit it too often. We're talking about anger as an emotional disorder. And you're listening to The Source on KSTX. You want to hear your comments, your questions, give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about anger as an emotional disorder. We're joined by Efren Fernandez from UTSA. He's written a book about the issue. And we're going to go to our phones. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Armando is on the line. Armando, you're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Let me tell you, I one time got very angry for about an hour and had a shouting match with some individuals who were trying to get us off a train in Latin America because they said our tickets weren't any good and when we got it verified, we paid, et cetera. Well, anyway, I couldn't believe how it manifested itself physically in me for about a whole week. I was so unsteady. I couldn't focus. And I said, I'm never going to allow this to happen again. But for a whole week, I couldn't believe it. I just wasn't myself. And I just felt terrible and very surprised by that.
And so how do you control your anger now?
Well, my anger, I control it because, like I said, that was an exception. It really was. I'm not someone that gets angry very easily. And maybe that was part of it. Maybe the fact that it made me that angry, that upset, that I had an outburst with them, and you know, and how dare they throw us off a train in the middle of nowhere? Anyway, and now in you know, life, everyday life, I look for peace. I read about peace, and I see peace. If I see something violent, or I hear something violent on the radio, especially my kids around, we change it. We turn it off. You know, and we talk about Martin Luther King, we talk about Sister Chavez, we talk about who are our real heroes in life, you know, and of course we turn to God, you know, spiritually, that's very important, that's very central. And I was really surprised, and I think the fact that I think that way, live that way, I wouldn't ever do that again, because it does mess you up. It does mess you up physically, and I'm totally convinced of that because I experienced it. That was about 20 years ago.
Wow. Mm. Armando, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing that with us. And what do you think about, so Dr. Fernandez, Armando told us about some of the tricks he's doing now and his focus and how he's trying to eliminate things from his emotional, you know, diet that would be not peaceful.
Yes, absolutely. We all take in information as part of our diet, and that can influence the way we look upon the world. And certainly it helps to look at the heroes, as you said. It helps to look for good role models. But at the same time, I would say don't be so hard on yourself because you got angry in that instance. What it tells me is that this was something which was morally reprehensible to you, and that's why you, a person who, by your own admission, does not get angry often, found yourself getting so angry for 1 week. Now, what is key is the way you expressed it, not just what you felt, but what you did. I don't know what you did, but you said that a week later the anger was gone. So I would be curious to know what made it go away. Was it just time healing it, or did you use some other techniques?
All right, back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Jason is on the line. Jason, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Y'all are talking about something that's very important in my life because I'm a combat veteran. Did both Iraq and Afghanistan, and I have PTSD. On top of that, about 4 years ago, I had a heart attack, and I had anoxia or lack of oxygen during that time. So basically at that time, what I've learned since then is that causes enough micro-trauma in the brain that the physical limiters that kind of are there for emotions, especially anger, don't work for me anymore. So that makes it a very difficult situation for me on a daily basis. I'm on medication. I'm on a number of different psychological therapies, but it's, for some of us, anger and dealing with it is, you know, not just something that's our daily life. It's, for me, second to second.
Wow. Well, thank you for your service. I want to say that first of all, and I guess you're dealing with the VA. Are they helping you with this?
They are now, but the process itself is anything but friendly. And I'm getting treated better than folks of, you know, a generation ago. You know, people who, you know, have PTSD from the Vietnam era are, you know, they're actually kind of ticked off at us of the new generation because some of us, our claims are being seen before theirs. So it is helpful, but it's very much far from a quick and easy, relatively painless process. It's, you know, I've had to get lawyers involved.
Jason, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. And so, Dr. Fernandez, is there anything you can do that, you know, suggestions or?
Certainly. Well, first of all, again, as David said, I applaud you for your contribution. And I would like to make the point that You know, we in the mental health services are still figuring out things as we go. PTSD has been traditionally viewed just as an anxiety disorder, primarily as an anxiety disorder. And what's interesting, for example, my colleagues David Forbes and Tony McHugh in Australia, who are contributors to my book, along with me, emphasize that it is not just an anxiety disorder. Anger is actually a real component of people who suffer from PTSD, long-term unresolved anger, just as you can have long-term unresolved grief. So what may have happened is that you're now having two emotional disorders, really, or two emotional symptoms. Your threshold for anger may have been lowered from what I can tell. And fortunately, again, there are programs that are in development now as we speak for the management of anger in PTSD.
And, you know, PTSD is not just something that happens to combat veterans, women who have, or anyone who's had a sexual assault, or people in a terrible car accident, things that have happened to people, a victim of crime. You're going to have PTSD. And if you have these anger issues, is that your PTSD telling you, go get some help?
Yes, I would think so. And that's a good point to make, too. It's not just combat veterans that we see PTSD. PTSD comes from any kind of catastrophic event. A natural disaster can produce PTSD. And certainly, yeah, we have to tune into the signals that tell us to get help, signals when our threshold, our tolerance for day-to-day events seems to have decreased.
All right, back to the phones. Jesse is on the line. Jesse, welcome to The Source.
How are you doing?
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. You know, I was listening to the doctor there, you know, and I was also listening to the other gentleman prior to that. I'm also a Marine Corps, 100% disabled vet from TBI and PTSD. And, you know, I can't understand, you know, and I think a lot of veterans think this way, you know, is why is it so difficult, you know? It's you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's a simple solution. Why they will not allow disabled veterans that suffer from PTSD to get private help? You know, we have hundreds of thousands of you know, and I don't know if that figure's anywhere near accurate, that suffer from this. You know, it is real. You know, the anger that gets built up in you is at quite times uncontrollable. It seems like it's just a natural state that you portray, you know, on others, you know, when it's triggered, and I'm not a doctor. I don't understand it. You know, I'm still trying to get through with this. You know, I think I applied in 2005 and never even got, you know, approved. I never got my 100% disability until a year ago. You know, it got denied. You know, we have to practically beg, cheat, lie, and steal, you know, sarcastically speaking, you know, just to get some assistance. You know, and they have, you know, the doctors that treat you within the VA, I don't blame them. They're back to back to back to back in patients.
Right. So Jesse, so you have a question, Jesse?
Yes. You know, my question is, you know, to the doctor is, what makes it so difficult for the government to? And I don't know if he's privy to this information, but he might have an idea. You know, what makes it so difficult for heroes that have defended this country, you know, for our government to allow us to go to doctors that are available?
All right, Jesse, we're going to give the doctor a chance to answer that. Thank you for your call. Really appreciate that. Thank you for your service. So, Dr. Fernandez, you know, obviously more research is being done. Yeah. People are aware that anger is as part of PTSD, and there's a lot of research being done in PTSD.
Absolutely. Jesse, as David said, yes, there's a lot of work underway, and there are good meaning psychologists I know in the VA, good meaning mental health providers. There's a lot of private help available, too. Now, what's important to realize is that you mentioned something, natural state that you're putting onto others when you're triggered. Now, to us in the mental health profession, this immediately sounds like what we call displacement. And it's a defense. It's a defense against what you cannot tolerate. So anger is a sign that you have been wronged. You perceive wrongdoing All right. And it sets in motion an action tendency, as we call it, to counter or redress that wrongdoing. So when you get angry and you cannot counter the person who offended you, what's the next best thing most people do? They turn it onto somebody else who may be totally innocent.
Misdirected anger.
Misdirected anger.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Well, anger. We didn't get to all of our callers. Don't be angry at me. I'm sorry. We're out of time. But this is an issue that we'll probably have to come back to it. Evidently, there's a lot of interest in trying to figure out how we can deal with anger. We see it in the streets of San Antonio with road rage and other issues that we have to deal with. And if for society to elevate, we're going to have to come up with a way to deal with the anger that we have. So Dr. Fernandez, Efren Fernandez from UTSA, appreciate you coming in today. Thank you for being on The Source.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in on The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flev is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.